Welcome to Virginia On Demand for this Tuesday, a daily podcast from Radio IQ featuring the top stories across Virginia. I'm Jeff Bossert. A court in Lynchburg has dismissed a challenge that would have blocked early voting on April's redistricting referendum. In a statement, Attorney General Jay Jones says the decision reinforces that the election was properly called and will proceed as scheduled. However, Tim Anderson, an attorney for the parties that filed the challenge, says the circuit court essentially said it won't rule on constitutional arguments until after the election. That means further legal hurdles could remain for Virginia Democrats who are working to redraw the state's congressional maps ahead of this fall's midterm elections. Early voting on the referendum is scheduled to begin Friday. Families of local airmen and sailors brace for long deployments. That's after the Pentagon reports six troops have died in the operation against Iran. WHRO military reporter Steve Walsh has this story.
Senator Mark Warner stopped in Norfolk and Virginia Beach over the weekend, where he heard behind closed doors from families who have sailors in the region, including on the USS Gerald R. Ford. Warner says President Trump has not provided a clear rationale for striking Iran.
He says he respects our military. If he doesn't make that explanation clear, and you think of all the families here in Hampton Roads who are worried about their loved ones, this is not an option. He has to do that.
Democratic lawmakers in the House and Senate plan to press for a vote on a war powers resolution this week. Aside from the Ford, the Navy has at least six other Norfolk-based ships in the region. 11 F-22 fighters and their crews from Langley were staging in southern Israel. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
Coming up in a little bit, a new collaboration look to the past to craft recipes honoring Appalachian cuisine.
And I think using true historical research and historical analysis can pull back on some of those stereotypes, help us to expand our understanding of the different complex strands and the changeability of Appalachian cuisine over time.
We'll have more on the story from Roxy Todd up shortly. The use of confidential informants by law enforcement is often shrouded in mystery and sometimes tragedy. Michael Pope tells us it's the subject of legislation currently being considered in the Virginia Senate.
We should never be giving someone money and asking them to go buy drugs when they are struggling themselves with the disease of addiction. This shouldn't happen to anyone.
That's Donna Watson, a mother who is grieving the loss of her son. He was struggling with a drug addiction when law enforcement approached him to purchase drugs as a confidential informant. He died of a fentanyl overdose, and now she's asking members of the General Assembly to take action.
It doesn't make any sense that if you're on probation for drugs, they catch you using drugs, then say, okay, don't do it again, and send you back out time and time again. He begged them that he could not do this. I begged them. I couldn't help my son while he was here, but we can certainly help someone else. This is still going on today.
Republican Delegate Mike Cherry of Colonial Heights introduced a bill that would create a new model policy for confidential informants, requiring that probation officers and prosecutors are in the loop with law enforcement. Senator Cree Deeds is a Democrat from Charlottesville who says confidential informants are not just important to prosecutors. They can also be significant to help undermine prosecutors, leaving confidential informants caught in the middle.
As somebody who tries cases, I love to have confidential informants on the stand. I mean, they make the best witnesses for the defense.
The bill has already been passed by the House and is expected to be considered on the Senate floor this week. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
A UVA center that studies economic trends is out with a report suggesting 2026 could be a tough year for Virginia. Sandy Houseman took a look and has this report.
Economists at the University of Virginia predict unemployment will rise this year to 4.4%. João Ferreira, acting director of the Center for Economic and Policy Studies, says job growth is already down.
Consulting and professional and technical services, we start seeing a decline. And last year, Virginia closed mostly with a stagnation and not with the creation of jobs.
In the fourth quarter of 2025, only three sectors saw strong growth: construction, linked to data centers, transportation, and healthcare. The latter, he says, could take a dive due to cuts in federal programs like Medicaid.
I'm not saying no. In fact, we predict for 2026 that the healthcare service will not create as many jobs as is created in 2025. So there is a slowdown.
He says rents will continue to rise in 2026, as will the price of power.
And this is because definitely the impact that data centers are having and the way they are escalating our energy demand. Dominion is already predicting that in the next decade, prices can go up 5 to 6 to 7% a year, depending on the scenarios.
But he adds we're not yet in recession because gross domestic product, the value of goods and services produced here, is still growing. I'm Sandy Houseman.
This note of disclosure, the University of Virginia is a financial supporter of Radio IQ. Montgomery County Sheriff Hank Parton has announced his retirement. He'll be stepping down April 1st after more than 30 years with the department. Parton started his time there in 1993, first elected a sheriff in 2015. He was reelected in 2019 and 2023. Many farmers across the Commonwealth are hard at work preparing for the growing season. They're doing that with the ever-growing impact of a warming climate and extreme heat events, which certainly have been documented in Virginia in recent years. Radio IQ meteorologist Nick Gilmore reports on some of the not-so-obvious impacts extreme heat has on our food cycle.
Late last year, the Virginia Climate Center at George Mason University released the first-ever statewide climate assessment. And that document shows extreme heat episodes are becoming more common and more frequent. That has direct impacts on agriculture, says Professor M.B. Mitchum, the director of GMU's online Masters of Public Health program.
So for something more like corn or tomatoes or peppers, plants that typically like that warmer temperature, when the sun bakes that soil, that can result in stunted growth, it can result in withered crops, it can result even in a loss of germination, so the crops will not grow at all.
But there are less obvious impacts from extreme heat on food cycles and production, too. Take fishing, for example. Extreme heat can reduce oxygen levels in water, making it difficult for some fish, like trout in Southwest Virginia, and more welcoming to some invasive species.
Like the snakehead fish, which does not require as much oxygen. So then you're crowding out native species, you're introducing invasive species, and then you're disrupting the ecosystem.
Mitchum says we can help address the problem by being good stewards of our natural resources. That could mean adding more green spaces in urban areas, planting a garden, or keeping chickens in our backyards. I'm Nick Gilmore.
You can find more on this story and sign up for the newsletter at the CommonWealth section of our website at radioiq.org. It began with a stack of old recipe books. A chef in Blacksburg discovered them and then created a meal to recreate historical Appalachian dishes. Now, four chefs from across the region are planning a meal centered around their family's food traditions. Roxy Todd explains the foods they serve might surprise you.
The meal is part of a project through Virginia Tech called Chefs Doing History, explains Anna Zeta, director of the university's food studies program and professor of history. She collaborated with four chefs as they dug into the archives at the university library.
Looking through old recipe books, old menu collections, old train car menus to kind of be inspired by and understand the roots in a kind of archival context.
The chef stumbled on many unexpected discoveries, including a collection of cooking and catering notes from Nikki Giovanni's family. In addition to being a renowned writer, Giovanni was an avid cook and wrote about the food her grandmother grew and made. Chef Travis Milton says reading her family's notes was like peeking through a window of her story.
And seeing that, you know, really kind of spoke to me, and it about like made me break down in tears. Like I got to know Nikki decently, and she was an amazing influence on me and a lot of other chefs and people in the region I know.
Stereotypes about Appalachia have led many people to both ridicule and romanticize the food from this region. Over the years, Milton has been one of the voices advocating for a more nuanced narrative.
I feel like there's this need of like, I need to tap into something quote unquote ancient or, you know, back to the roots of Appalachia. And I'm like, no, tap into what you experience, because I feel like too often people try to paint their own experience of Appalachia as the definitive experience.
Milton encouraged the other chefs in the project to think more about their family's food traditions. They talked about eating vegetables grown in gardens and dishes that use processed and canned foods, ingredients available to working families, like Spam and canned salmon.
And those are equally valid and have equal value in my mind. And when you can tap into something that's inside of you that speaks to you, it really shows through to the guests.
Milton lives and works in Southwest Virginia. The three other chefs work at the Maroon Door Restaurant in Blacksburg. Justin Bailey was born in McDowell County, West Virginia.
Grew up with going into the garden with my grandmother and picking vegetables and stuff. And I honestly looked at it more as work at that point. Until I grew up and realized the love that was in every meal. And I think that's the most important part to me about Appalachian cuisine is the family, is sharing it with everybody.
Stephen Doyle grew up a few miles outside Blacksburg, and he too has vivid memories of his grandmother's cooking.
Justin and I's approach to how we treat cuisine is pretty often rooted in what we grew up with and what we enjoy cooking, which is Appalachian food.
Last summer, Doyle discovered a box of old recipe books and used that as an inspiration for a meal he served at the Maroon Door. That's actually what sparked this collaboration. When Zeta heard about Doyle's historical cookbook meal, her team invited the chefs to collaborate with them on an Appalachian-themed dinner.
And I think using true historical research and historical analysis can pull back on some of those stereotypes, help us to expand our understanding of the different complex strands and the changeability of Appalachian cuisine over time.
Danielle Christensen is an associate professor of folklore and Appalachian studies at Virginia Tech and another collaborator in the project. She says exploring our food traditions can help expand how we understand all the things Appalachia is.
So we've got stuff from the garden. We've got things that people have processed in their homes. We've got things that people have foraged in the woods. And then also access to industrial produced commercial foods, right? And the ways that all of those sort of four different strands come together on the table is something that I'm super excited to see.
You can taste the results of Chefs Doing History on March 26th at the Maroon Door in Blacksburg. Space is limited and tickets are on sale now. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
You can find more on the historical Appalachian dinner, including the menu, on our website, radioiq.org. This note of disclosure, Radio IQ is a service of Virginia Tech. There's a big warm-up on the way in our forecast. Today, cloudy with isolated rain showers, a little breezy and warmer, and we'll have highs in the upper 40s to the upper 60s for the Bristol area. Still cloudy tonight, some isolated rain, best chance along and north of I-64, lows in the mid-40s and lower 50s. Will be cloudy Wednesday, possibly a shower or two for those north of Route 460, and a little breezy, highs in the upper 60s to mid-70s for the Danville area. Cloudy again Thursday, possibly some showers in the western fringe of the state, breezy and warm, highs in the upper 60s to upper 70s. Thank you for listening to Virginia On Demand. A little reminder to subscribe and tell your friends about it. For Radio IQ, I'm Jeff Bosser.